Okay, I'd like to introduce Rebbetzin Lisa Septimus, who is a Yoetzet Halacha of the Five Towns, as well as a Yoetzet in Great Neck, a graduate of Stearns College's graduate program for advanced Talmudic studies. She subsequently served as a program's Shoelet Meshiva. Is that how you pronounce it?
You got it.
Okay. She teaches Talmud, Chumash, and Ethics at North Shore Hebrew Academy High School in Great Neck, where she also coordinates informal education programs and serves as the dean of the class of 2016. In her active role as Rebbetzin of the Young Israel of North Woodmere, she is integrally involved with adult education and youth programming, and she's taught numerous places. Her husband is Rabbi Yehuda Tseppermans, and they are the parents of four children. Welcome.
Thank you.
Oh. I didn't introduce the title of your speech today. Okay. Is If I Am Married, Why Do I Feel Alone?
Okay. So a tough title that I gave to this, and I'll start out by talking a little bit, tell two stories of how I came to this title. So in my time as working as a Yoetzet Halacha, in addition to your more typical shiurim on Taharat HaMishpacha, I talk sometimes about relationships, about intimacy, and I was giving a class about intimacy in Great Neck. Am I too far away from this? Okay. In Great Neck one day, and I thought it really encompassed a lot, and I got good feedback. And I was speaking to one woman after, and she was saying, I really enjoyed it, but I thought you were going to go even deeper. I said, what do you mean? And she started to give me observations that she's had about married couples in her experience in Great Neck, in the Five Towns, struggles that people are having. And she goes, here's what women need to hear, or here's what men need to hear also. She said, if I'm married, why do I still feel alone? And I thought, whoa, well, that is powerful. And it really got me thinking about that topic. And do people who are connected in many ways and have a spouse sometimes, or maybe even often, feel that disconnection? And I started to do some research, a little more about couples therapy and different issues. And I also came across a very interesting story. One therapist was saying that she had a couple she was helping, sitting in her office, and they were arguing and fighting about this little issue or that little issue. And at the time, her husband was serving in Iraq. And even though she did not show it, a part of her felt very frustrated. And she was thinking, look at them. They can't appreciate what they have in each other and what I would give just to have the physical presence of my husband. And here they are sitting together and not able to appreciate that. And as she told this over to a colleague, the colleague said, you don't get it. That couple sitting right there, they might as well be sitting 6,000 miles away from one another, the way they're feeling. And, you know, that really brought home the message of how we can live with another person and yet sometimes emotionally feel so distant. And what is that about, and what can we do about that? So I want to start with kind of uncovering what is human nature and human needs. What is our need for connection and our nature? So if you look at, there's a very, it's really become more popular in the past 10 years or so. It's called EFT, Emotionally Focused Therapy. And it's based on attachment theory. And one of the reasons it's become very popular is that it is one of the more research-based, statistically proven methods. So the whole base, just to understand what it seems basic, but where is it coming from? What does it tell us about human nature? So, first source. First, this theory tells us that most significant relationship problems will be about the security of the bond between the partners, about their struggle to define the relationship as a safe haven and secure base. Contact with intimate others is the primary way humans have evolved to deal with anxiety and fear. Proximity to an attachment figure tames fear and offers an antidote to the feelings of helplessness and meaningless. So what this supposes, first of all, is that everyone in their life, every human being who is born alone, has certain fears and anxieties. And those fears and anxieties are often alleviated by forming secure attachments to people. I mean, this is most prominent in children. And children obviously form secure attachments in a healthy childhood to their parents. And then, as adults, the primary source, if more source sheets are needed, if anyone wouldn't mind just passing some of these back. And then in adults, we look for a spouse to fill that place of the secure attachment. The key issue in distressed relationships is each partner's accessibility and responsiveness to emotional cues. As a distressed woman remarked to her spouse, "It's not the fights that really matter. I could handle disagreements if I felt like you were there for me. But I can never find you when I need you. I feel alone in this relationship." The spouse becomes the primary attachment figure for the majority of adults, and as such, their main source of security and comfort. So, in attachment theory, there's an awareness that the attachment figure that most adults, at least married adults, look for is in their spouse, and some are blessed with a healthy, secure attachment, and others are in an insecure attachment situation, which we're going to talk about a little bit more. But I wanted to sort of start with some sources in the Torah, because what I find so remarkable, before you get to attachment theory and other theories that we'll talk about, is this recognition of the struggle or of the question of what we need as human beings, even in Sefer Bereishit. So some of you may know this. It's very made most famous by Reb Soloveitchik. There are two stories of creation. What are the two stories of creation, especially regarding man? Anyone?
Well, first Adam was created, and then he looked among the animals, couldn't find a partner, and then Hashem gives him a partner. He takes a rib in the middle of the night and has, here is your Isha. Okay. And then the other one is they're together,
okay,
as one, and then they're split.
Okay.
So that's his end.
So in some of your description of the second is the influence of Midrash. Which happens to all of us, because we grow up with so many midrashim in our brains that it becomes part of the pshat. So I'm going to reverse the order you said it in. In Perek Aleph of Breishi, if you see, it says, "Vayivra Elokim et Adam betzalmo, betzalem Elokim bara oto, zachar unekeva bara otam." God created man, and in this case I would say mankind, in his image, in the image of God, he created him. Zachar unekeva bara otam. So actually, there's an emphasis on both Adam and Chava being created at the same moment, and yet they seem to be created as unique, separate beings in this pasuk. However, in Perek Bet, we have the story of Adam created alone at first. And God says, after Adam is created alone, Vayomer Hashem Elokim, Lo Tov Heyota Adam Levado, E'eseh Lo Ezer Kenegdo. God says, it's not good for man to be alone in this world. I'm going to create for him a helpmate. And then, as you mentioned, God presents Adam with all the animals, and the next bolded lines, U'lechol chayat hasadeh u'le'adam lo matza ezer kenegdo. But when God presents him with every species, even though Adam assigns a name to it, it doesn't fulfill his need. It does not create a ezer kenegdo, someone who he can form a connection with. And then, when God takes from his side one of his ribs, unclear what he took exactly, then Hashem presents Chava to Adam, and he says, Zot hapa'am etzem me'atzmai, ubasar mivsarai. This time, she is bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. And you see that in a very concrete way, there is this connection. Because in almost a physical way, she resembles me. She's a part of me. I feel this connection. And now the Torah seems to have preceded Freud almost, as it says, Al kein ya'azov ish et aviv ve'et imo ve'davak bishto ve'hayu lebasar echad. And so it comes that man will leave his father and mother and cling to his wife, and they become one flesh. So, first of all, this acknowledgement, what's interesting is we started by saying that attachment for a child is to one's parents, their primary caretakers. And the Torah recognizes this. Even though Adam didn't have human parents, he had God, but the story is telling us about human nature. It is human nature that a person will feel that attachment, that secure attachment with his parents. And only when he finds someone that he feels connected to, or he feels that he could form that attachment to as a wife, will he leave his parents, and will he then go and be with his wife. And the new attachment figure will be wife. Now, even though it's speaking to men, the same is true for women. Only will a woman leave her parents to go with her spouse when she finds the person who she can be attached to, who she can form this connection with. But what's interesting is the Torah seems to, it ends almost with this very rosy-colored picture. V'davak v'ishto v'hayu l'basar echad. You will cling to your wife, will become one flesh. There also is, of course, a bit of sexual innuendo there. But the real what it's truly communicating is something emotional. And it leaves it as if, yes, you'll become one and you'll feel one forever. There doesn't seem to be this sense of what we were saying, being married and yet feeling alone.
Just happily ever after.
Happily ever after in the Torah. Yes. But remember that there were two stories of Breishit. And the rabbis, the Chazal, were very aware of it. Rav Soloveitchik was very aware of it, and I think not just aware of there being a textual problem, but aware of there being this two ways of looking at human beings and at marriage. So I want to just point out a very famous midrash that you were referencing before, which is this concept of Adam and Chava having initially been created connected. So Rashi, there are many places the Midrash is quoted. Rashi is one of them. Says, Shnei partzufim b'ra'o t'chila אחד מלפניו, אחד מאחריו, וצלחו לשניים. ועשה מן האחד חווה, פרצוף, חילקו לשניים, שהיה זכר מכאן ונקבה מכאן. So, man was created, to resolve these two stories, man was created with a two-faced being at first. Some Midrashim says as an androgynous being, one face facing forward, one face facing back, and God separated them. But what I find interesting about the Midrash also is that people always quote this Midrash as, you were created together, when you marry, you're like re-entering what was always meant to be together. But interestingly, in this Midrash, they're created back to back, which means they are completely connected, and yet they have their own face. They have their own way of looking. One looks one way, and one looks the other way. So even when they're connected as one being, even when they're created as one being, there is a sense of the importance of these two beings being individuals, of being separate. And we're going to see how that plays out. I'm going to skip the next source for now because I feel like we're never going to finish. But it's just another interesting midrash on it. And I want to conclude sort of the Torah section with the Rav, Lonely Man of Faith. Adam the first, majestic man of dominion, and Adam the second, the lonely man of faith, obedience, and defeat, are not two different people locked in an external confrontation, but one person who is involved in self-confrontation. In every one of us abide two persona, the creative, majestic Adam, the first, and the submissive, humble Adam, the second. What the Rav, this is going to be a very brief summary of a very complex idea that if you have not read, should be read, which is Lonely Man of Faith, but in his mind, Bereishit Aleph represents man as the individual who goes out to conquer the world, who imitates God in that way as a creative, strong, conquering being. And in Bereishit Bet represents man who can feel alone, who is humble and strives for connection. And what the Rav says is there's no human being who doesn't have both sides. Some of us have one side more prominently than the other, and some of us have the other side more prominently, but we all have this autonomous individual side, and we all have this drive and this need to connect to other beings in life and to form relationships. And they exist simultaneously. And we each have this anxiety that comes along with that need. So those two have to always be balanced. So on page 2, we write, wait, conflicting needs. What does this have to do? Let's get back to our topic. If I'm married, why do I feel alone? And what can I do about it? So one focus, there's a certain theory that is very popular that really spoke to me in my research, and I wanted to spend some time on presenting today, which is the theory of differentiation. And as the Torah was pointing to, these two human drives that exist, the theory of differentiation focuses on these two drives as well and achieving the proper balance of them. And if individuals can achieve the proper balance of them, and couples can as well, then the theory goes that their relationships will be stronger, that they will feel more connected to one another, they will not feel alone, and they will not also feel put upon or imposed upon by the neediness of another. Okay, so differentiation. Nurturing in balance. What is the balance? The drive for individuality and the drive for togetherness. How to be two without losing you. Okay, these two life forces are constantly at work in all human relationships. Marriage is particularly vulnerable to this challenge, since the desire to define a separate self apart and different from our spouse may seem and feel contradictory to a simultaneous desire of being like-minded and in connection with him or her. So, again, sometimes we have trained ourselves that what'll make us happy and what will make our marriage strong is if we can be on the same page. We always feel like we need to be on the same page. What's our parenting approach? We need to have a parenting approach as a couple. What's our religious approach and style? How do we view faith? How do we view God? What do we communicate to our children, ourselves, our community, and so many other things, from where we want to live and what kind of friends we want to have, and you know, if we want to, what we want to do when we go out together. And we think that the more in sync we can be, the stronger the relationship. And differentiation actually kind of pulls the rug out from under that and says, no, it's not necessarily about being in sync that is going to create a strong marriage. Can anyone guess why? What would be bad about being in sync? Like, let's say your spouse loves outdoor activities and you don't. Wouldn't you want to try to kind of become more like that? Why would it be bad to sort of adopt his or her style?
You might feel resentful that that's really not what you're interested in.
Okay.
And then you always feel put upon.
Okay.
Giving up what you like for the other person.
Okay, so possible resentful. What else?
Well, then let's say you have children, then you're not, let's say you're always going on camping trips, then you're not exposing your children to what you really like, which would be like cultural activities or going to museums and stuff like that, so they only see one side.
Okay, so first of all, two individuals each bring their own strengths to the table, and you don't want to suppress your strengths or your interests. Resentment is obviously a biggie.
You're not giving of yourself into the relationship.
Okay.
By compromising.
You're not giving of yourself. I'm going to expand upon that unless someone else has another. Yeah.
I'm just thinking that generally not communicating well with your spouse, because if there are differentiations there, probably best to at least bring them up and come to somewhat kind of common conclusion. Like, I don't feel like doing that every single Sunday, because
right.
A few times you go along with it, and then all of a sudden you realize that it's going to keep steamrolling, and the fact that probably one side or another is probably going to end up getting what they want much more often, and the other person eventually is going to resent that.
Okay, so the resentment again. And you were saying something in the beginning that was a little closer to what you were talking about, and although you didn't use this word, so pardon me for imposing it, but I think also, even if it doesn't lead to resentment, miraculously, you lose a piece of your authentic self. And the reason that might be important is because what you were talking about communication in the beginning, and then at that point, what you're communicating to your spouse is not actually the real you. So how can you be completely connected, and how can there be real intimacy if there's no authenticity? So, okay, let's read on a little bit more about this. Differentiation is the skill set of being able to live in close proximity to a partner and still maintain a separate sense of self. It is the ability to go forward with your own self development while being simultaneously concerned with your partner's happiness and well-being. Okay, not easy, because usually we kind of think of it as my desire, his desire, we need to compromise. But we learn compromise, but we don't, we either think then someone's, you know, how much is he winning or how much am I winning? Okay, so one of the main authors and proponents of this theory is David Schnark. And he has a great article, if you'd like to. I really had to cut down my source sheet because of it was just ridiculously long. And he has 4 points of balance that every individual should try to develop in oneself. I only ended up putting in the first one, which is the kind of the center of his theory here, but I do recommend you looking up the article. People often feel claustrophobic or controlled in committed relationships, or feel like they can't be their true self, or feel like their sense of self is starting to disappear, and they don't know who they are anymore. Others are constantly worried about abandonment or safety and security, and constantly press their partner for commitment and unconditional love. So what he's trying to suggest is often one person in the couple feels a little bit more suffocated, and the other one feels more like chasing after the person, like, I need more affirmation, I need more commitment validation. So the first thing, the ability to balance our needs for autonomy and attachment is called differentiation. Differentiation is a scientific process that occurs in all species. For humans, it is about becoming more of a unique individual and a solid person through relationships with others. First point of balance, solid, flexible self. To the degree you lack a solid sense of self, you depend on a reflected sense of self. You depend on getting a positive, reflected sense of self from other people. Many people say they want intimacy, but what they're looking for is validation, acceptance, or unconditional love. There's nothing wrong with wanting to feel validated, accepted, and dearly loved. But if you depend on a reflected sense of self, you crash when these aren't forthcoming. And you spend lots of time talking about safety and security, abandonment, and vulnerability. So the idea being that we all need to figure out who we are, what we're about, what our interests are, and have a sense of our own worth just really by being a human being created in God's image. Being, you know, that alone being our own sense of worth, that I am worthwhile, and because not feeling that way is the first thing that leads to looking for our spouse to give us that confidence, to give us that sense of self. And usually, it doesn't go well. What it can lead to is something that he calls emotional fusion. The fear of being separate and alone in the world. And when we are anxious, we naturally seek validation from our partner. In an emotionally enmeshed relationship, our partner feels obligated to give us validation because our anxiety makes them feel uncomfortable. Giving validation in this context is an attempt to soothe the other's anxiety in order to soothe our own. I'll give you an example, okay, just to make it more clear. Let's say you're not feeling so comfortable, so secure, and you look towards your partner and you're wanting him to say, or her to say, do you love me? You know, you love me even when I'm down. You love me even when I've maybe lost my job. You love me when... And in that moment, your spouse will hopefully say it, but you might sense what's happening is they sense your anxiety, which makes them uncomfortable. and maybe even put upon in that moment. So their response doesn't feel as good because you sense their discomfort in the response. And it's this negative cycle where you were looking for validation from your spouse and now they didn't give you quite the validation you want. You feel even worse. So, and the spouse feels worse because they're so uncomfortable in this moment. So that's, what?
So how are you supposed to resolve this?
Okay. So, okay, so making things right. Let's get into it. The practice of holding on to your essential self while also staying present and open in an intense emotional relationship, not withdrawing from your partner and not trying to control change, is what develops your differentiation. Declaring your boundaries is an important early step in the differentiation process. It is about maintaining your core values and beliefs and not conforming to the pressures of loved ones, while still being emotionally and physically close to them, especially as these loved ones become increasingly important on you. Okay, to you, sorry. So I know that didn't answer the question fully, but it is about it's essentially about maintaining a healthy sense of self, but we're going to talk about how to do that. And one key about doing that is being very aware of who you are and your emotions and your needs and not conforming. 5 minutes?
Not really, but.
Oh, 2 minutes. Okay, to the other's needs. Okay, so we don't have time for everything, so we're going to skip around a little. Let me give you one little example here. We're going to do the second example. When Sally and Paul go to parties, Sally hangs on to Paul, which makes Paul just want to get away. When he does, Sally criticizes Paul for abandoning her and not paying enough attention to her when they are out together. Once Sally is able to develop a more skillful dependence differentiation, she will likely say, "I hate the way I feel at this party. I'm hanging on to you in a way I don't like, and I bet you don't care for it much either." Without feeling criticized, Paul now has more space to feel empathic towards Sally instead of feeling resentful. So again, being more direct and open and honest about our feelings, so the person who's hearing us can actually say, "Yeah, that's a tough situation. I feel for you," rather than almost physically reacting by hanging on them. Okay, because we have very little time, I encourage you to read a lot of it on your own, and I want to get to the last author, which is Terence Real. Particular challenges of the 21st century. First of all, this is from the book, The New Rules of Marriage, which also is a great read for any and very practical for anyone who wants to take a look at it. I'm going to sum up what he says instead of reading it. He first of all says we live in a time that is very challenging because marriages used to be more of convenience and more of companionship. And now we live in a time where people expect incredible amount of intimacy. They, for their entire lifelong, passion, romance, intimacy. And it's hard to sustain, especially hard to sustain because we're still working off old rules of either the rules of the first half of the 20th century, where usually women especially were more submissive and repressed certain things to be in agreement, or working off rules of the end of the century with feminism, which was like, "I'm not going to take it anymore," empowerment, but not really learning how to turn that empowerment towards the couple. So he points out 5 losing strategies and turn them into 5 winning strategies. needing to be right in an argument. We all know, I think you know what that means.
Yes.
Okay? And now shifting that from complaint to request. controlling your partner. Seeing so many women, unfortunately, and men do this, but it's more the Jewish woman stereotype, although I don't always like that, which is, you know, how can, he's the head, but I'm the neck. And how am I going to sort of
turn his head,
get him to do it this way? Which is not a way to connect with your spouse. It's a way to manipulate them. A true connection is to express yourself, express your thoughts, your feelings, your desires, and hear his. Speaking with love and savvy. 3, unbridled self-expression. Instead of just saying everything that's on your mind, everything you like or don't like, respond with generosity. 4, retaliation. When she does something we don't like, we tend to want it subtly get back. And instead we have to empower each other. 5, withdrawal. This was the resentment thing we were talking about in the beginning. A lot of people give up. They're too tired or they're fed up and they emotionally withdraw. Okay, you want that, we're done. Instead, cherishing. Okay, I'm sorry that I couldn't get more specific. I encourage you to look on your own. And finally, wonderful song from one of my favorite shows, Company by Stephen Sondheim, that I think really expresses the duality in marriage and the inner conflict that many people feel in a marriage of being defined by one's spouse but wanting to be separate. Thank you all for coming. Have a wonderful day.
That was very interesting. I'm sure you could have spoken for an hour.
There's a lot of material.